morning. Today's daf and tzachim daf pei gimor and pei beis amud aleph. We are continuing a discussion that we had yesterday in the Gemara regarding carbon that becomes tameh. Carbon that becomes tameh requires disposal, and as we learned in yesterday's daf, it requires sreifa. You have to burn it. Where exactly do you have to burn it? So the Mishnah says really you have some choices or options in terms of where you're going to burn it. So the Mishnah brought down, the Mishnah's on the bottom of pei aleph amud beis. So the Mishnah says that what you can do is you can go lifnei abir, you can go back to the base of Mikdash and burn it using the Yatzei HaMaracha, using the wood that's on the top of the Mizbeach. So that if it is burnt in its entirety. The Gemara goes on to explain, we saw the Gemara yesterday, the reason why you have to go back to the base of Mikdash and burn in the base of Mikdash is almost like a penalty. You weren't careful. There was a requirement that you have to make sure that a carbon remains tahor. This carbon didn't remain tahor. You weren't careful. And evidence of the fact that you weren't careful is that the entire carbon becomes tameh. It wasn't even like a little bit became tameh. So therefore, you have to go back to the base of Mikdash and burn it over there. The Gemara's explanation is kedei levayshan. It's a way of really shaming the individual for really not taking care of the carbon. If some of the carbon becomes tameh, so the Mishnah described in yesterday's daf, so you don't have to burn it in the base of Mikdash, but you can go back and burn it on the rooftops in your chatseros. And then the Mishnah pointed out that those who were cheap would always go back to the base of Mikdash because that way they wouldn't have to use their own wood. The Gemara's discussion yesterday revolved around a b'risa. The b'risa says that if you want to burn a carbon in your chatser, or from the in your own chatzah, using the atzei amaracha, using the wood of the base of the mizbech, that you can't do. For a simple fear that you're going to end up having leftover and you're going to use it for your own personal benefit, and that, of course, would be a violation of the prohibition of me'ilah. And then the b'risa says that you can't bring your own wood into the base of mikdash and burn disqualified carbon over there. Now, why not? Well, what's the problem? So the Gemara provided two suggestions in terms of why that should be a problem. So one suggestion says the Gemara is Kedisha lo levaisha mishenlo. Well, what we don't want to do is we don't want to embarrass people who don't have their own wood. Meaning you bring your own wood, and then everyone else is around, and, oh, he brought his own wood, I didn't bring my own wood. And so therefore, not to create any type of embarrassment for those who don't have, so therefore you shouldn't bring your own wood as well. That's one. And Rava gives a different explanation because of a suspicion. As we described yesterday, the suspicion would be that what you're going to end up doing is bringing home whatever leftover wood you have. What are you doing taking home wood from the Beis HaMikdash? Meaning, people don't understand that that was your own wood, and so therefore, when you bring home a little bit of whatever's left over, people are going to look at you with a funny look. What's he doing? So the Gemara notes that there's a distinction, there's a halachic distinction between these two reasons, and that is, what if you bring wood that's clearly distinguishable from the wood that's used in the base of Mikdash? So there, if the concern is you're going to make other people feel bad, you'll still make other people feel bad. If the concern is what happens when you bring home whatever wood is left over, well, everyone realizes that's not the wood of the base of Mikdash, that would be fine. Okay. Adkan, that's just a quick review of what we saw yesterday. We're on Pei Beis Amud Aleph. We're right in the middle of the Amud. We're five lines before the Mishnah. And we continue to Nanhas, and we have a Mishnah. It's a Mishnah in Tamid. So we went through this not that long ago. Let's say 2 years ago. Relative drop in the bucket. Rosh HaMamid HaYamamid Asa Tameim Al-Shar HaMizrach. So we know that the Kohanim had shifts, and they operated the base of Mikdash based on shifts, and each family would be working basically about two weeks over the course of a year. Anyway, what happened was, you wake up in the morning, and the Rosh HaMamad, the head of the family, the head of the shift, realizes that some of the Kohanim were tummy. They weren't careful. And so, they're obviously not going to be able to do the Avoda that day because they're tummy. But more than that, what they're going to do, what the Rosh HaMamad is going to do, is he's going to position these Kohanim who are Tameim at the Shar HaMizrach, at the Eastern Gate. Now, exactly which gate this is, subject to a discussion. I saw some of my sources, my notes, that that's not totally clear which gate we're talking about over here. The Shar HaMizrach, the Eastern Gate, Shar Nikanor, Eastern Gate of the Har HaBayis. Either way, The point is going to be very clear. They were put over there as a demonstration, hey, these Kohanim weren't careful. They become tamei. So my time, I'm Rav Yosef kedei levayshon, and Rav Yosef says, yeah, to embarrass them. Now the reason why the Gemara discusses the Mishnah and Tamid over here, in other words, we're not really learning Masechta Tamid, but because of this kedei levayshon, which is very similar to what we described in our Mishnah, for the person who wasn't careful about his karban from becoming tamei. So here, similar basic idea. These Kohanim weren't careful. They allowed themselves to become tamei, and therefore a public demonstration of, hey, these Kohanim weren't careful. They're not going to be working in the Beis HaMikdash today. Rav Amar Mimnei Chashad. And Rav says, no, what we're worried about is the Chashad is a suspicion. Meaning, they're not going to go to work that day. Right? They're calling in sick. So,
I'm going to say they don't want to do that.
Yeah, why are these Kohanim not here today? Oh, they don't want to do the Avoda? So my beina, so must be they have another job to go to, a better job to go to, moonlighting Kohanim. So yeah, right, correct, the paying job. So my beina, and again, the Gemara says there are two reasons why we're going to stand the Kohanim up in the front. One's negative, one's positive. The negative is we want to kedei levayshon, we want to embarrass them. And the second reason is no, because of chashad, we don't want people to think that they're moonlighting. So the Gemara says, "My benayu ke benayu mipanke inamidka gadol shishura." So two possible suggestions, says the Gemara. Either number one, they're mefankin. As Rashi explains, they're mefunakim. They are. They don't have a day job. In other words, to the expression of quit your day job, they don't have a day job. So for them, it's clear, it's evident that they're not cutting the avoda to do something else. So for them, if the reason was just to make sure people realize they're not moonlighting, don't worry about these people. These Kohanim are not moonlighting. They don't have any other job to go to. But if the purpose is kedei levayshon, to embarrass them, to say, hey, you should have been more careful. Well, these Kohanim obviously still should have been more careful. And the Gemara says, gedil shishura, another possible nafkamina, which is basically the same point as Rashi explains. In other words, people who have a job, but not a good not a good paying job. So in other words, they have work to go to, but okay, it's just, you know, work to go to. They don't really make money. So once again, kedei levayshon is going to be in effect, but to chashad is not going to be in effect. Okay, adkan. All right, we start the next Mishnah, and our next Mishnah is going to continue along this discussion of carbon disposal. Okay, something goes awry, something goes bad with the carbon, so you need to dispose of it. Now, we already talked about this in the previous Mishnah. The previous Mishnah talked about the carbon becoming tamei, and the Mishnah just simply spoke, our last Mishnah simply spoke out, where do you need to burn it? Meaning, the Mishnah assumed that, of course, you have to burn it, meaning as part of carbon disposal. It requires sreifa, and the Mishnah was just talking about where to go. Should I go back to the Beis HaMikdash? Can I burn it in my backyard? Okay, that was the previous Mishnah. But now our Mishnah is going to be discussing the following. HaPesach Shiyatzo Shinit Ma'yisarf Miyad. Your Karban Pesach either becomes Tamei or experiences the Psul of Yotzei, which is just simply it's taken outside its wall. Every Karban has walls in which it cannot go outside. So just a quick refresher. Like a carbon chatas, which is going to be eaten by the Kohanim. That cannot go outside the Azara, the temple courtyard. Shlamim, which is eaten by everybody, that can't go outside of Yerushalayim. Every carbon has mechitzasos. And even the blood of carbonos, which we'll talk later this morning, also has mechitzas, also has walls that they cannot go out of. So, to that the Mishnah says that if a carbon Pesach either experiences a psul of yotzer, becomes tamei yisar from yad, you have to burn it, and you have to burn it immediately. Do not wait. You don't need to wait. In fact, it will become clear in the Gemara, you shouldn't wait. But rather, you should burn it right away. It requires sreifa and sreifa miyad. Ninmo abalim oshemesu. Let's say there's a disqualification of the carbon, but nothing intrinsic in the carbon. Carbon's fine. Just happens to be, no one's there to eat it. Why not? So the Mishnah gives two scenarios. One, the owner's bertame. Two, the owner's died. Either way, so now the carbon is disqualified, but not an intrinsic psul. Or let's say it like the Gemara is going to say it, a psul shebegufo. So there, to ubartsu raso. So there the Mishnah says what you have to do is you have to let the carbon sit overnight, and then you burn it. V'yisarif v'shisha asar, and you burn it on the 16th. Now, by the way, the Mishnah says let it stay overnight and burn the 16th. So if you're following the calendar, you realize that's not really overnight, meaning that's overnight. Right, that's second day delivery. Right, because
Yontif, it'll,
correct, because the next day is going to be Yontif. You want to now burn disqualified karbanos on Yontif that you can't do. There are certain things you can do on Yontif. Cooking on Yontif, being makriv karbanos that one's obligated to bring on Yontif. But to burn disqualified karbanos, and certainly disqualified karbanos from the previous day, that you're not allowed to do on Yontif. So so to that, the Mishnah says, okay, so you're going to burn it simply the next day. You'll wait till the first day of Chol HaMoed, the 16th day of Nisan, and you burn it over there. Ibert Sura. Now, first of all, the words, you're going to see that word again and again over the course of this morning. What does Ibert Sura mean? It literally means let its complexion become disgusting. That's the most literal translation. Although in our context, and Rashi makes this point very clear, you just simply let it go overnight, right? Regardless of how rotten or not rotten it becomes the next morning. Why? Because once you leave it overnight, then it becomes nosar. And that's a psul shebegufo. Essentially, what the Mishnah is saying is, look, if the carbon becomes disqualified, but for an external reason, so you first have to give it an internal psul, and then you burn it. Which is why you need, why you need ibrit sura, why you need to let it stay overnight. And Rav Yochanan ben Broka says, no, if nobody's able to eat the karbon, so then you burn it immediately. What do you think is behind Rav Yochanan ben Broka? I mean, the Gemara is going to spell it out. But intuitively, we can all figure out already what Rav Yochanan ben Broka is thinking is that when there are no consumers of the Karban Pesach, that is a psul shebegufo. That's something intrinsically wrong in the Karban Pesach because we made this point, I've lost count how many times we made this point, but the Karban Pesach's essential purpose is for eating. Once I no longer have a consumer for the Karban Pesach, so now it's not a Karban Pesach, meaning it's simply a disqualification intrinsic to the Karban Pesach. Obviously, the Tanakhama argues that point of Rav Yochanan ben Broka. We will come back later to discuss and flesh out a little bit better the machlokas between the Tanakhama and Rav Yochanan ben Broka. Okay. Bishlam Atame, we start with the Gemara. Now, from this point going forward, there are times in Karbanos where there is a Yerusha. In terms of Karban Pesach, I don't know. Right, I don't know. That's a fair question. The Gemara now, from this point going forward, from here until pretty much the middle of the next Amud, a lot of source work. Where does all this come from? Where do these halachas come from that when a karban becomes disqualified, A, it needs sreifa, and B, sreifa miyad, has to be burned right away. So bishlam atamik siva basar shiga bechol tamal lo yochal beishi sareif. So when the meat of a karban becomes tamei, so I don't need a drasha. I have a pasuk in Chumash. The Torah says that when meat becomes tamei, ba'ishi sareif, I have to burn it. Ela yotze min alan. Okay, good. But that's only one disqualification. There are numerous disqualifications when it comes to karbanos. So let's say yotze. When the karban was taken outside of the walls, so now the karban becomes disqualified. Now it has to be disposed of. How do I know that it has to be burnt? Dechsiv hein lo huvaz dama ala kosh pinima. So the Gemara now is going to try to arrive at this conclusion based on an incident, based on an episode. We're now going for fast-forwarding in the Torah to, or rewinding, to Parsha Shmini, where there the following occurred. We know that there were seven inaugural days before the Mishkan was finally set up. And then after the seven inaugural days, so then you had Yom HaShmini, the eighth day. The eighth day, that means after the 7 days of inauguration, on the eighth day, you had the first day the Mishkan was in operation. It was an exciting day. First of all, calendarically, when did it occur? The first day of Nisan. This is now, right, we're entering into year two in the Midbar, in the desert. So we're now holding by the first day of Nisan. So this is the first inaugural day. Now, on this inaugural day, so first of all, was Rosh Chodesh. Okay, first day of Nisan. So that means that you had all the karbanos that were brought specific to Rosh Chodesh, which is regular karbanos that I'm going to bring every Rosh Chodesh from this point going forward. In addition to that, you also had special karbanos for that particular day, because as we know, when it came to the first days of inauguration of the Mishkan, so every Nasi from every tribe brought a karban one of the first 12 days of Nisan. Right? You read about it in Parsha Shmini. So so every Nasi brought a karban days 1 through 12. Who was the first one who brought a karban on day 1 of that inauguration of the first day of Nisan? So that was Nachshon. Nachshon ben Aminadav, the head of Shevet Yehuda. So he brought carbon on day one. Fine. So in other words, and one of the carbonos that he brought was a chatas. So essentially now you had a chatas of Rosh Chodesh, chatas of Nachshon, and there was another chatas as well. But anyway, what happened? What happened was, as we know, there was a devastating day. It was both a combination of everything. Joy, sadness, because it was on that very same day, the eighth day of inauguration, the first day of Nisan, the first day that the Mishkan was effectually in operation. So on that day, the two sons of Aaron died. And so now what happens is that the two surviving sons and Aaron are now in a state of what's called aninus. They are nonin. They are even Avelus, by the way, is for the most part, it's a dindarabanan. Okay, the discussion of whether the first day of Avelus is a dindaraisa or a dindarabanan, but Avelus is essentially a dindarabanan. But upon the loss of one of the Shiva Krovim, one of the seven relatives, so now at that point in time, you're in an onain. For Kohanim, what an onain means is that he cannot do the avoda during that day. And he cannot eat karbanos on the day that he is an onain. Right? Where do we see that in the Torah? So you actually see it in Parshas Kisavo. Right? The end of Sefer Devarim, the Torah says, Lo achalti ba'oni mimenu. I didn't eat it. Now, it over there is referring to Maaser Sheni. And the Gemara says a number of times, if an onain is not allowed to eat Maaser Sheni, which has a little Kedusha, one can only imagine that an onain cannot eat any carbon, which has much greater Kedusha than that of Maaser Sheni. Good. So Aaron and Elazar and Itamar, the surviving sons, so they became an onain at that point in time. Then what happened, you see it all inside in the Pesukim, then what happens is Aaron disposed of the karbanos, meaning he did not eat the carbon chatas, not eat the carbon chatas of Nachshon, not eat the carbon chatas of Rosh Chodesh, and Moshe was furious. Moshe goes over to Aaron and says, what are you doing? Meaning, you, chatas, carbon chatas, you're supposed to be eating the carbon chatas, right? One of the things that the Torah describes in terms of carbon chatas is that a Kohen eats it, which provides kapara. Part of the atonement process of the Karmel Chatas is that it's eaten by the Kohanim. So Moshe says to Aaron, what are you doing? And they get into a debate. And Aaron responds and says, no, this was right. And the Torah doesn't give us much detail in terms of what the issues were. But eventually Moshe acquiesced. And he said, no, Aaron, you're right. I was wrong, you're right. Okay, you're right. These karbanos should have been burnt. That's the outline of the incident with Aaron, Moshe, and the first day of the Mishkan. Here now, the Gemara is going to quote just an excerpt from those Pesukim. It says in the Pasuk, now again, let's just remember, what are we trying to do? Now we're trying to learn the source of how do I know that a carbon that experiences Yotzei, where it was taken outside of its walls, how do I know that it requires Sreifa? There is no explicit Pasuk in the Torah that tells us that. The only thing the Torah tells us is that if it becomes tame, it requires sreifa. But how do I know that if it experiences other psulim, it also is going to require sreifa? Yes. So the pasuk says, "Amalam Moshe Aaron, madu alo achaltem." I skipped a line. Let me go back. Minalan ela yotze. Minalan. How do I know that yotze requires sreifa? Dechtiv. The pasuk says, "Hein lo vavaz damal akorsha pinima," where Moshe says to Aaron, "What are you doing? The blood was not brought into the azara, or I should say rather, into the Heichal," meaning the blood of the Karban Chatas was not taken out of its regular location. So, what are you concerned about? You're concerned that maybe the blood was taken into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So, Aaron says, no, that didn't happen. Well, maybe, and this is the Gemara's it's not an embellishment. I don't want to say that because that's not the right word. But basically, it's a more detailed discussion of the conversation between Moshe and Aaron. So Moshe says to Aaron, "Well, maybe the blood was taken outside of the azara." Amar lo la b'kodesh haisa. And to that, Aaron's response is, "No, it was in kodesh, meaning the blood was exactly where it was supposed to be." So Amar lo b'kodesh haisa v'hein lo avaz damal l'kodesh pinima madu lo achalta mosa. So Moshe says, okay, so if the blood wasn't taken outside of its location, its proper location, it didn't go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and it wasn't taken outside the Azara, so I'm going to ask you very simply, how come you didn't eat the carbon? Question mark. What's clear from that conversation, and we're learning a halacha based on a conversation, but what's clear from that conversation is that something we're taking outside of his mechitza, it should be burnt. That's the Gemara's derivation of how we know that when carbon's taken outside, it needs to be burnt. Mechlal, dinafki, inami.
From this conversation,
I mean. Well, I'm saying, yeah, that's what I said. I'll get the psukim inside. Yud.
Yeah.
Right. Here we go. It says in Pasuk Tet Zayin, the Eisir Chatas, as far as the goat is concerned, the Chatas goat, Darosh Darosh Moshe, so Moshe did an investigation, V'inei Soraf, and it was burnt. V'yitzof Alazar V'Elisamar, and then he gets angry with Alazar V'Elisamar, V'nei Aaron, and Rashi points out over there, he really got angry at Aaron, but, you know, right, correct, it's his brother.
The kids.
Correct, so he gets right. Anyway, so okay, so the, so fine, so that's the, so that's how the conversation went. So based on the conversation that the Gemara now provides for us between Moshe and Aaron, yes. So now we know that Yatzah requires burning. The Gemara says, Mechladi nafki inami ayol dama lifnim basrefa he see it requires burning. Now Bishlam and Nitmagale Rachmana Bekashim Kal. Now the Gemara says, good. I have two sources. I have a source regarding Tame, and that doesn't require any drush. That's just a pasuk in Chumash. And I have a source regarding Yotzeh. But let's think about this. Regarding the source of Toma, Galer Rachmana Bekashim Kalam, there the Torah, the pasuk that we quoted, that was in Vayikra Perek Zion, so that's regarding Shlamin. Good. So if Shlamin becomes Tame and it requires Sreifa, I can only imagine Kachim, higher level Karbanos that become Tame requires Sreifa. Kol Shekim Bekachim Kachim, Ela Yotzeh, but now let's go to the disqualification of Yotzeh. Where there we learned the halacha based on what? On an episode in the Torah regarding a carbon chatas. A carbon chatas is kache kachim. So all I know now is that if kache kachim become disqualified through Yotzeh, it requires Reifa. So kache kachim, kachim kalim minalan. But how do I can't just simply assume, well, the same thing would be true by kachim kalim. Kachim kalim, which is a lower level carbon, maybe the halacha is not the same. Vesu, and furthermore, had the Tanya Lan Dama, Nishbach Dama, Yatsa Dama, Chutzah Klaim, Dekaim Alan, Bisreifa. Also, there's a whole host of other psulim that we haven't really tackled yet. Let's say the blood wasn't taken outside the base of Mikdash, but let's say the blood just simply wasn't sprinkled that day. Sunset, blood wasn't sprinkled. Or, top of the next Amud, Nishbach Dama. Blood went right on the floor. Wasn't collected in a bowl. Can't sprinkle the blood anymore. Or Yatsa Dama Chutz Klayim. Or the blood was taken out, which I know that's what we're talking about right now. But the point is that there are other psulim. Dekayim Alam B'Sreifa. And we know that when it comes to all these psulim, Sreifa is the proper way of disposal of the carbon. How do I know that? Where's the source? So Nafkalam and the Rabbi Shimon. The time for the Gemara says, well, maybe this is the source. Rabbi Shimon Omer Bekodesh Be'ishti Sareif. Limin Al-Chatesh Sreifa Sabekodesh. So the Torah says that it has to be burned in a fire. That's talking about the carbon chatas. So, how do I know that this is true regarding other kachim kachim and the imurim, the fats of kachim kalim? So the Torah says, but kodesh beish tisareif, Rashi goes through how the pasuk can extend to these other carbonos as well. Take a look at Rashi. I'm not going to go through it right now for how the Gemara is extending it. Ashkechan kashim 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 kalim minalan elakol psula bekarsh besreifa loshna kashim kalim loshna kashim kalim gemara gemirala. Finally, the Gemara acknowledges, you know what? We're not going to find a source. We're not going to find a source for all the different types of disqualifications. And the Gemara finally acknowledges it's not a pasuk in Chumash, but rather gemara gemirala. Gemara gemirala is code for halacha Moshe Misinai, meaning when all said and done, karbanos that become disqualified require sreifa. Where do I know that from? Answer, not from the Torah. But rather, it's Gemara Gemirala, it's tradition, it's Halakha Moshe Misinai. Okay, now that we're here, so now we'll go back to the story of Aaron and his Chatas. So what are we learning from that story? The Gemara is bothered by that. It happened. In other words, that was an incident, that was an episode, it happened. The Torah records it, but that's not the source of the halacha. The source of the halacha is halacha Moshe Mitzrayim. Okay, so now, quick review. This one's easy. How do I know that any carbon that becomes disqualified, and the psul is the psul shebegufo, it's an intrinsic disqualification. How do I know that needs to be sarev, nisraf, that needs to be burnt? Answer, halacha Moshe Mitzrayim. Okay.
Ulatan.
Right. Yeah. So if it's that's a reasonable question, if not better than reasonable. So that's good. So the so could be.
Because he was angry.
I was going to suggest that.
Because of
his anger. Mm-hmm. We find every now and then that that anger results in a forgetting of halacha. Okay.
Ulatan. He got angry afterward. So you should have known, and then you got
something happened before.
I right, it says like so. It says like sof al alazar v'al esimar, which that's anger.
No, he does have anger.
I understand, but that's because right, right.
He knew, that's why he got angry.
That's it.
Because Moshe knew, that's why he got angry. He didn't forget afterwards.
No, but what he thought, but he was.
No, you're saying he knew it before.
He wouldn't get angry.
Right, right.
He got angry after.
All right, let's table the discussion. We'll come back to it after, but let's go on for now. Ula Tana de Rabbi Baravua de Amar Afila Pigoltan Ibert Sura Minala. Now, the Gemara tells us that there's another opinion. In other words, it's not the normative approach. Normative approach is anytime a carbon becomes disqualified, and it's a psul shebegufo, it's an intrinsic disqualification. A, it needs to be nisraf, it needs to be burnt. Then B, right away. Right, we don't have to wait. The Gemara notes that there's a Tana who does not agree with that. The Tana is Tana de Bei Rabba Baravua. It's Rabba Baravua is usually the name of an Amora. So I guess what it means is that he has a Braisa. Okay. Either way, he's of the opinion that even if it's a Psul Shebegufo, it still needs to wait overnight and then and only then be burnt. What does he derive that from? Even if the disqualification is pigol, which is absolutely a psul shebegufo, Tani Bitsur still has to wait overnight. He bases it on Xerishava. Xerishava tells us that and Rashi goes through the psukim, and certainly take a look at Rashi. I'm not going to go through it right now. But we have a pasuk by Nosar, the psul of Nosar, that uses the word avon. We have, when the Torah describes pigol, the Torah uses the word avon. So based on Xerishava, any time a carbon becomes disqualified prior to burning, it has to wait overnight, like Nosar. So the Gemara now notes, we also have the word Avon used in the episode with Aaron. So why don't we use that as another source? And that was burnt right away. So his response would be, you know what? Normally, it also requires the Ibrit Surah. So how come Aaron burnt his carbon right away? And over there, it was a ruling specific to that particular time. You'll see this in the Gemara every now and then. What's called the Horasha, meaning that most mitzvahs are applicable for all time. In fact, the Rambam writes, by the way, you know, before he counts the 613 mitzvahs in the Torah, he says, let me give you the ground rules. The ground rules are very simple. If a mitzvah doesn't apply for every generation, so then that's not one of the 613 mitzvahs. Okay. So anyway, so this particular halacha, that Aaron burned it right away, that's Horasha. That was specific to that particular time. The hashad, I mean, the kopsula dekosh besreifa loshna dekashi kashim loshna kashim kalam gemar gemir la. So the Gemara says, okay, now, where are we right now? In other words, that's one Tana's opinion. We don't hold like that Tana. Anyway, we hold all karbanos that become psul shebegufo need to be burnt. Good. Now that we know that, and how do we know that? Halach lamoshim izinai. Good. Now that we know that, Gemara says, I have a really simple question. Let's go back to that pasuk in Perek Zayin of Vayikra. V'habasar asher yiga b'chol tamei, any meat that becomes tamei, ba'esh yitisaref, it needs to be burnt. Okay, yeah. So, now I don't need that pasuk anymore. Correct. So, because Beish Yisrael, Lamali, how will me buy Leish Yisrael? Fasab Kodesh. So the Gemara says, you know what we learn out from the Pasuk? Not the fact that you have to burn it. That's Halacha Moshe Misinai. Where I need to burn it. I need to burn it in the Beis HaMikdash. The Gemara says that there's another pasuk also, Vayikra Perek Zayin, that describes that when meat becomes tummy, it needs to be burnt. So how will the gufa itzurich? So the Gemara says, no, I need that pasuk to tell me that if the meat of a carbon becomes tummy, I need to burn it. The Gemara says, why? Why would you need a pasuk to tell me that? Isn't it halacha Moshe Mizinah? So the Gemara explains, no. Salka datcha amina, ko psula dekosh kegon, lan dama v'nishbach dama v'yasa dama v'nishchata balayla, de besreifa delesnu b'chulin. The Gemara says, look, I understand that if any disqualification happens to a carbon, the Gemara gives a whole slew of examples. The blood was left overnight, the blood was spilled, the blood was taken outside of the azara, the animal was shechted at night. So there, those are all disqualifications specific to a carbon. Meaning outside the world of carbonos, there's none of this. None of this becomes an issue. Right, you're shechting an animal so that you can eat the animal, and the blood spills on the ground. Okay, fine. Right. In other words, these are psul and they're specific to carbonos. So I understand now that if I have a psul specific to a carbon, okay, so then you have to burn it. You have to burn the carbon. But now you have the psul of tame. Tame is a generic. It's a universal disqualification. All animals are subject to tuma. All meat of animals are subject to tuma. So now one can make the argument: yes, this carbon become disqualified. But with a disqualification that's not specific to carbonos, maybe emalati by sreifa. So maybe it doesn't require to be burned. Vitiskale bikfura and burying it would be enough. Just a simple burial. Kamash malan. So the Gemara says that's a chiddush, that even though it is not a carbon specific disqualification, nevertheless it requires to be burnt. Okay. Nidmu abalam ushamei sutu bat sirasam. Okay, now we're going to get to the smachlokas that we saw in our Mishnah. Let's remind each other. In the Mishnah, we lay down the ground rules, and that is that any time a carbon becomes disqualified with an intrinsic disqualification, it needs to be burnt, and burnt right away. What if the Mishnah says, the carbon's fine, just the owners are no longer available. Either they are tummy or they're dead. Okay. So the Mishnah says there, the carbon's going to be disposed of through sreifa, but not right away. Let it stay overnight, receive the disqualification of Nosar, and then burn it. And then the Mishnah brought in the position of Rav Yochanan ben Broka, who says, even in this case, sreifa miyad, you burn it right away. That's the machlokas in our Mishnah, and now the Gemara is going to flesh it out. Amar Rav Yosef. We are in Pei Beis Amud Beis. We are about two-thirds down on the Amud at the two dots. Amar Rav Yosef machlokas shenitmu ba'ala machazrika. This machlokas is only when the owners become tame after the sprinkling of the blood, because at one point in time, meat was fit to be eaten. But if the tumas balim, the disqualification of the owners, occurs before zrikas adam, we all will agree you burn it right away. This is his limitation of this machlokas. Now, at first glance, if you think about it, kind of makes sense. I mean, the Gemara is going to end up rejecting it, so that's why I'm being tentative in my speech. But it kind of makes sense, because if they become tame prior to the sprinkling of the blood, that means that this carbon was never fit to be eaten. Meaning at the point of Zrika, which is the first opportunity that the owners can eat it, there are no owners. They're either physically not here or halachically not here. So one can make the argument that, well, because the owners are not here, therefore the carbon was never fit to be eaten, so therefore that's the psul shebegufo, and there is no one who argues that point. That's what the Gemara is trying to suggest right now. The Gemara meisvei. The Gemara says, I don't think you're right. Look, consider the following braisa. Zeha klal, kol shepsul begufo, yisarav miyad. If the psul occurs intrinsic to the carbon, so then you burn it right away. Bidam uve balim, but if the disqualification occurs either to the blood or to the owner of the carbon, So then it requires Sreifa. Now, what were things noted that were extrinsic to the Karban? Two things. Blood and owner. Ketani balam dum yedadam. Now, it's not just, you know, a coincidence that the Braisa talks about two extrinsic disqualifications. The blood of the animal and the owner of the animal. Madan lifnei zrika. Now, when does blood become disqualified? When do we care about its disqualification? Only before zrika. After you sprinkle the blood, who cares? It's done. Mitzvah was accomplished. So the only time that we can have any kind of conversation about disqualification of the blood is prior to the zrika. Abalam lifnei zrika. So the same thing is true regarding the owner. The disqualification of the owner is also before zrika, and yet the Braisa says, what do we have to do? Wait. Wait until it stays overnight, and then and only then do we burn the carbon. Good. So that Braisa is clearly of the position that even when the owners become tame prior to the zrika, I still have to let it wait overnight. Ela idmar hachian itmar. So the Gemara says, you're right, we're going to refine our statement. Machlokish shenimu balam lifnei zrika. The whole debate in our Mishnah between the Tanakam and Rav Yochanan ben Broka is before zrika. The lo is chaze basal achila dav lekipsula begufa. Where they're arguing. Where the Tanakama says, let it wait overnight. And Rav Yochan ben Broka says, no, that is the disqualification begufa, that's intrinsic. But if the disqualification of the owner occurs after the zrikas dam, well, there was a point in time where the carbon was edible. And because of that, now, even though now there are no owners, there's nothing wrong intrinsic with the carbon. And before we burn it, we have to let it stay overnight so that it gets a psul shebegufo. Adkan. Okay, so what we basically have now done is we fleshed out the machlokas of our Mishnah, the Tanakam and Rav Yochanan ben Broka. They're arguing, clearly, but they're only arguing when the owners become tame before zrika. If the owners become tame after zrika, because the carbon had a shasa kosher, so therefore this disqualification is not intrinsic. We finish up with this discussion. Rav Yochanan amar afla achar zrika is nami machlokas. Rav Yochanan says, no, I disagree. Even after zrika, there's going to be a debate. V'az Rav Yochanan tamid amar Rav Yochanan. Now the Gemara is going to note that this is Rav Yochanan being consistent. This is Rav Yochanan being Rav Yochanan. Because he made a statement, which is, now just so that we don't get super confused, Rav Yochanan now is quoting the Tana, Rav Yochanan ben Broka. And he says, Avrei Damer Rav Yochanan, Rav Yochanan ben Broka, Rav Nechemia, Amru Davar Echad. Rav Yochanan ben Broka, Hadamara. Now Rav Yochanan ben Broka, we just quoted. He was of the opinion that when the owner of a carbon Pesach becomes Tamei or dies, and even if this occurred after the Zrika, Rav Yochanan ben Broka says, that's a Psul Shebegufo. That's an intrinsic disqualification, allowing us, commanding us, to burn the carbon, dispose of the carbon by burning it right away. That's Rav Yochanan ben Broka. Good. Rav Nechemia, my he did tell you, Rav Nechemia, my min meaninus nisrifazu. Now, Rav Nechemia, we're going back to the incident, the episode of Aaron and the carbon chatas. Okay, why did Aaron not eat the carbon chatas? Fair question. Well, why didn't he do it? Meaning it's a carbon chatas. Shouldn't he eat it? So, that is subject to a debate in the Gemara and Zvachim. Right now, we're going to focus on Rabbi Nechemia, who, and his opinion is, he didn't eat it because of Aninus. He was a no-nain. In other words, that day, it was the first day of Nisan. That day is when Nadav and Avihu died. So at that point in time, he becomes a no-nain. So, Lekach Ne'amar Ka'ila. And his response to Moshe was Ka'ila. Meaning, it's the last pasuk of the episode. Vaydaber Aaron al Moshe, Hina Yomi Kruvus Chatasam Vesola Sam Lefne Hashem, Vatikrana Osi Ka'ela. And this happened to me. Somewhat ambiguous, but he's referring to the death of his sons. And that's why I can't eat it. So Ka'ela. Vaha Aninus Kalachas Rika Havya. Now, again, I'm going to encourage you to go through Rashi. Rashi goes through the whole step-by-step discussion of the Gemara over here. I'm going to give the shorthand version of the whole discussion. But essentially, he's a no-name. Aninus is like a disqualification that occurs after Zrika. Meaning, what's the problem of being a no-name? not the hakrava, not the offering of the carbon. We know, again, all this is in Rashi. We know that an onein kohen gadol can do the avoda. The only thing the onein cannot do is eat the carbon. So the Gemara's point is that Aaron's being an onein is the tantamount to something occurring to the carbon Pesach post-Zrika. Meaning where the only impediment is that the owner can't eat it. That's it. So there you find a common thread between the case of Aaron and his carbon chatas, and a carbon Pesach where the owner either becomes tameh or dies after the zrika. So it's the so that is the connection between the two cases. V'chi istarif. That's the Gemara's very next point. V'chi istarif la'alter. And we find that by the carbon of Aaron, it was burned right away. It didn't require ibrit surah. So the Gemara's point is that you see that Rabbi Yochanan, who aligns Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka together with Rabbi Nechemya, is basically arguing that once a carbon cannot be eaten, that's a psul shebegufo. That's an intrinsic psul in the carbon, and it consequently, it has to be burnt right away. And you don't have to wait till ibrit surah. Good. One more point to finish off this whole discussion. We're now on the very top of Pei Gimel Amud Aleph. Rabbi Mosif of Rav Yosi Aglili. Rabbi says, you know what? I'd like to add one more Tana to the list. Meaning Rav Yochanan has Rav Yochanan Bebroka and Rabbi Nechemya. Two Tanaim who say that once there is an eating impediment of the carbon, once no one can eat the carbon, that's a psul shebegufo. That's an intrinsic psul. So Rabbi says, I'd like to add one more Tana. And that's Rav Yosi Aglili. Detani Rav Yosi Aglili Amar Kol Inyan Kulayna Medaber Lepapar Manisrafim V'Sir Manisrafim Lisrof Psuleim Abe Sabira V'Litein Losase Al Achila San. The discussion, the conversation between Aaron and Moshe regarding the carbon chatas was not talking about a regular chatas. I say regular, I mean a chatas that's offered on the outer mizbeach. Right, the more common carbon chatas, but rather parim hanisrafim, seirim hanisrafim, carbonos carbon chatas that are burnt, that are not burned on the outer mizbeach, whose blood is sprinkled in the mizbeach hapanimi, and then the animal itself is burnt outside of the Beis HaMikdash. This is Parim HaNisrafim, Seirim HaNisrafim. A number of examples, right, the most common, but the one that we speak about most is Yom Kippur. Okay, where there you have the Par and the Seir of Yom Kippur, right, coming up just a short couple days from now. Anyway, so the point is, V'litein lo saseh l'achila san. You're not allowed to burn the animal in the Beis HaMikdash. It has to be burnt outside the Beis HaMikdash, and you're not allowed to eat it, obviously. So, Amru lo, chata shenichnas dama lifnei v'lifnim, minayin. How do I know that if I bring the blood of a chata sapanimi into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, meaning we're going to bring it into the Kodesh, that's the mitzvah. But what if I bring the blood into the Kodesh HaKadoshim? He says, this is Aaron's response, no, the blood is not brought in, Kodesh Pinima, into the inner Kodesh, meaning Kodesh HaKadoshim. Mechlal di inafikihi, inami ayil dama, bisreifa. So what's clear from that discussion is that if the blood was brought into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, or if the animal was brought outside, it requires sreifa. So once again, you see that if there is an eating impediment of the carbon, okay, so then you have to burn it. It's considered psul shebegufo. Good. That is Rav Yosi Aglili, and Rava says that goes right along in line with Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka and Rabbi Nechemya. I'm adding him to the list. V'Rav Yochanan, and the Gemara now notes, Rav Yochanan doesn't agree. Don't add him to the list. Savadama Basar Chadamilsihi Balim Milsachrisahi. No, because you're equating the blood of an animal and the meat of the animal. Okay, good. So in other words, that's Psul Shebegufo. I'm not having that discussion. I'm having a discussion where nothing is wrong with neither the animal nor the blood of the animal, but rather the only thing that's wrong is that the owner can't eat it. That's different. So in other words, I wouldn't put Rav Yosi Aglili in the list because he's not talking about the owner of the animal. He's talking about the blood of the animal. That's a different discussion than what we're having. We're having a discussion of owner of the carbon. Adkan, that is the end of the discussion of the burning of karbanos that are psul. So again, just a quick recap. If and the rule is very straightforward. I know there was a lot of, you know, a lot of offshooting discussions, but the rule is very straightforward. When you have a karban who has a disqualification which is intrinsic to the karban, so then you can burn it and you must burn it right away, straight from miyad. If, however, there's a psul that is extrinsic to the karban, so then ibritzur, you have to wait, let it wait overnight. It's going then it will get an intrinsic blemish, which is otherwise known as nosar, and then you burn it. What is open for discussion, which is what we had in our Mishnah, is what is the definition of psul shebegufo versus an extrinsic psul, meaning karban pesach that cannot be eaten because the owners are no longer available, either tamei or dead. So is that a psul shebegufo? That's Rav Yochanan ben Broka's position, or no? Is that an external? Is that an extrinsic psul, and therefore requires ibritzura? That's the machlokas. But otherwise, the basic rule is the distinction between an intrinsic invalidation versus a extrinsic. So
that's again, like it becomes pasul.
Right. If they, well, no, yes and no. Meaning, you can't just simply, because it's going to become no sir, you can assume so right now. Meaning, no sir is a.
That's
the
purpose. I mean, you're going to do that.
Understood. But still, in other words, we're not, the Torah doesn't call a no sir until it actually experiences waiting overnight.
No, but the fact that the intention is, doesn't make it
possible. No. Right. I understand, but no. In other words, it has to wait till overnight. Okay, let's start the next mission. Let's start the new discussion, and that's the following. At samos va'agidim va'anosar, yisrafu b'shisha asar. Okay, things that are not necessarily meat. Meaning, look, the Torah says that any meat that's left over the next morning has to be burnt. That's the halach of nosar. That we know. What about things that aren't meat? So, for example, bones. Now, one can ask a very simple question. Who's eating bones?
Marrow.
Okay, good. Now we're getting to one of my favorite. That's my favorite topic. Okay, so the marrow and the bones.
Make a big bone.
Okay, fine. Okay, so maybe what the Mishnah means, and I say maybe because I know the Gemara coming up, so I know this is coming. But maybe what the Mishnah means is that when it says the etzam with the bones, it means bones with marrow inside. Okay, so or gidim. Now sinews. Okay, you know this most by the chicken, right? When you get to that connection between the muscle and the bone, so you get to that really tough part, which you know you chew on a little bit, but right, meat, not meat, right, somewhere in the middle, okay. And then so that's what samos, that's gidim and hanosar, and just any regular meat that experiences nosar, yisru for b'shisha asar. So then it has to be burned on the 16th day of Nisan. Now again, why not the 15th? We know the answer.
Yeah.
Because it's Yontif. You're not allowed to burn disqualified karbanos on Yontif. So Chalte Zayin Lios B'Shabbos, let's say Pesach falls out on a Friday, which doesn't happen. Correct. All right. But Lo Badu Nisan. Right. Rosh Chodesh Nisan cannot fall out on a Monday, Wednesday, or Friday. Now that the calendar is set. So this won't happen to us. But if let's say the first day of Chol HaMoed, I'm talking to the B'nai Eretz Yisrael, not to us. If the first day of Chol HaMoed falls out on Shabbos, so now you can't burn 2 days in a row. I can't burn on Pesach, meaning on Friday, and I can't burn on Shabbos. So what do I do? Yisrof will be at Zion. Solution very simple. Burn on the 17th. Lefish einam dochen lo'os Shabbos v'lo'os Yontif, because it's not going to override neither Shabbos nor Yontif. You cannot burn disqualified karbanos on Shabbos nor Yontif. They had designated areas. Yeah. They had some designated area.
If it's not allowed to burn on Yom Tov, California, why is it?
Okay, fine. Right. What's the chiddush of the Mishnah? That's a reasonable question. I don't know. Amar Rav Mari Baravu Amar Rav Yitzchak. Someone's kachim shishim shu nosar mitamim esayadayim. Hol v'nasde basus ledavar ha'asar. And so now, bone and marrow talk. Bone and marrow talk for the rest of today. Bone and marrow talk going into tomorrow. Bone and marrow talk. And basically, I'm going to put it in the terms of Rav Mari Bar Avuha. I have a bone. Now, bones have marrow inside of them, right? The thick bones, right? Your solid bones, your spinal bones. So they have marrow inside of them. So basically, his point is as follows. because the bone had marrow inside of them, even if they currently don't, since they were, the Gemara uses a language which we saw back in Shabbos by Muksa. It's a basis ledavar ha'aser, right? The word basis, same in Hebrew as in English, it's a base. It's a base for something which is prohibited, meaning the marrow inside. Marrow inside is meat. It qualifies as meat. And so since the bone serves as a basis ledavar ha'aser, so therefore it is considered meat itself. Now the way the Gemara expresses it is metame esayadayim. Right, end of Pesachim, we're going to learn this. We're learning Pesachim right now. I think it's the last off in Pesachim. We're going to learn that when meat becomes nosar, minatorah, it's not tameh, meaning minatorah, it's nosar. Just simply disqualified carbon. What the Chachamim did is they slapped a tumah on the nosar. Why did they do that? To basically encourage the Kohanim, A, don't let this happen. Don't let the meat become nosar, because then it's going to be tameh, and B, basically, so that we'll get rid of it right away, and we won't leave it over anymore. So there is a tumah derabanan imposed by the Chachamim on Nosar. So what the point of Rav Mari is that this is true not only regarding the meat of an animal, it's true regarding the bones of an animal. Now, bones are inedible. So how could you call the bones Nosar? It's a basis ledavar ha'asar. Since the bones are encasing the marrow, so therefore the bones have the status of marrow itself. And to which the Gemara says, and we'll have to end over here, but to which the Gemara says, name him Esayele. You know what? He's right. And look at our Mishnah. Hagidim, I'm sorry, Hatzamos Hagidim, Anosu Yisufula Tazayim. So Hani Hatzamos Echidami. What bones are we talking about over here in our Mishnah? Elam Adelas Bum Mawach. What are you talking about? Non-marrow bones? Lama Bistrefa Nishtinu. Why would you burn them? Just throw it out. It's fine. They're bones. It must be that they have marrow. So now I understand. Because the bones are encasing the marrow, so there's a requirement to not only burn the marrow, but to burn the bones as well. Because they are now afforded status of a basis. But if the bones have no status, so don't burn the bones. And as Rashi explains, that's a lot of firewood you're going to need to burn bones. Burning bones takes a lot of heat. Don't burn the bones. Take out the marrow, burn the marrow, and throw the bones out. Why would you want to be burning bones? So it seems from our Mishnah, yay, that's right, that once you have bones encasing the marrow, so in addition to being a case for the marrow, they are given status as well. It has basically no sir status. So therefore, there's a requirement to burn not only the marrow, if it's left overnight, but the bones as well. So this is a statement made by Rav Mari. It seems to be supported from our Mishnah. Tomorrow, we continue with the bone and marrow talk. And we get to heart sinews also tomorrow.